ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Five more minutes, please. I just need 5 more minutes sleep. Okay, but if I leave now, I'll have time to hit the gym before the kids wake up. First, I've got to make sure they can find their socks and their school bags. Oh, God, the plumber is coming today to unblock the sink. I'll leave a note for him, but I've got to unload the dishwasher. I've got to buy raffle tickets for that fundraiser. Actually, that can wait till tomorrow. But I need to check what time my work thing is on. Oh, my shit. I forgot school lunches. All right, I'll skip the gym or the kids don't eat. Women's time is an endless battle between the things that we have to get done and the things we would prefer to be doing, like sleeping, or going to the gym, or for a run, or a swim. According to the Australian Institute of Health, 41% of Australian women aged 18 to 64, so most of us, aren't getting enough exercise compared to just a third of men. And a study by Vic Health found that when children enter the equation, 6 out of 10 mums aren't active enough. A wise woman, me, once said, to-do lists like treadmills never end. So how do we get exercise back on top of that list? Because when you're physically active, you live longer. According to the World Health Organization, you're 30% less likely to die than people who don't exercise. You reduce the chance of pretty much any disease you can think of, and you cope better with stress. So put on your sports bras and sweatbands because it is time to get physical. I'm Yumi Steins. Ladies, we need to talk about the gender exercise gap.
I have lots of gym memberships in my background of, you know, you pay for a year and you go for 3 months and that's the end of
the
it.
The gym membership of shame.
Yeah.
Meet Amanda Hooton. Amanda is a journalist who wrote about her experience of the gender fitness gap in Good Weekend magazine. For most of her life, Amanda has been totally uninterested in exercise. When she did have spurts of motivation in her 20s, it was all about weight loss.
You went and did exercise to sort of punish yourself. All the messages were just about go to step aerobics in the 90s, you know, and lose 5 kilos.
Amanda went through lots of what she called body relaunches. Ugh, do you remember that term?
This was something I did with my best friend, and we used to talk about, you know, body relaunch number 499.
Right.
And that would involve doing some form of painful exercise that we didn't enjoy and also doing some kind of insane diet that made no sense from any kind of nutritional perspective.
The grapefruit diet, do you remember that one?
Grapefruit, what about the cabbage soup diet? So it was always this thing where I'd do it probably once or twice a year and I would lose a few kilos and then I'd feel fine and then I think, oh, thank God, that's over, and then I'd just go back to doing exactly the same things as I'd done before.
Into her 30s, Amanda continued this pattern of body relaunches. Then she met her husband. His relationship to exercise was always very different to Amanda's, guilt-free and not a punishment for eating dessert.
He has a really sort of joyful relationship with exercise. He gets an enormous amount out of it. It's a really integral part of his life. He went and ran a marathon distance the other day and he literally started running at 4:30. He was over by just after 7:30.
Yeah, sure. Home and sweaty.
Home and alive, which felt like felt like a miracle. Every time he does something like that, I'm just like, that is just unimaginable. 42 kilometres or whatever it is.
So Amanda and her husband have always had a very different approach to exercise. But when they became parents, those differences became more entrenched.
When our daughter was smaller, I felt guilty about leaving her. And that was sort of just based on nothing, really. I mean, nothing practical in my life. There was no reason that I couldn't do it. But I certainly felt the pressure not to do it. And I did all of the things that I think lots of women do, where you try to combine exercise with taking your kid to the park or going on a bike ride or something, which, you know, is just insane because nobody can do those two things together in any meaningful way. I had a real sense that any time that I wasn't kind of at work, I should be sort of available to be with her. And I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to be enjoying the time with her.
Mum guilt. It's very real, and we'll get deeper into that later. But the decline in exercise can appear long before kids are in the picture.
There's some sort of exercise cliffs that women fall off. And the first one is at adolescence.
I want you to meet Professor Lyndall Strasdens. She's a clinical psychologist and researcher at the Australian National University who focuses on women's relationships to exercise. She says girls start falling behind when they go through puberty.
It's a pulling back of involvement, particularly in sort of organised sports and redirecting time into other activities. A more sedentary approach, because usually when you're studying or working, you're not doing much physical activity.
According to the Australian Institute of Sport, 48% of males aged 15 to 24 participated in sport-related activity at least once a week, compared to 36% of females. When we say young men and young women, we mean people aged between 15 years old, so teenagers, all the way to 24 years old, so young adults. One thing going on here, according to Lyndall, is body self-consciousness. Exercise means your pubescent body is on show.
There's an enormous spike in sexual harassment at that age. So young women are both very aware of their own bodies, and they're having to deal with the experience of either being judged or harassed around their own bodies. So it's not that this is all in their head, it's actually in their lives that, that this problem is really showing up at that age group.
It's excruciating to me that we haven't found a way to protect teenage girls from being catcalled, harassed and judged while exercising, while at this most vulnerable time in their lives. And it's not just rando gross men ogling our tits as we play netball that puts us off. Women of all ages, including me, are forced to think about our safety.
So a whole lot of activities that might be easy to fit in with other schedules, like going for a jog or all those sorts of things, start to throw up other barriers around safety and when you can go for a jog and where you can go for a jog. We don't really have many safe spaces in cities or in the countryside for women to exercise whenever they want to. It's quite tricky.
I just want to share something that happened to me a couple of years ago. I was going for a run and there's this path where it's split into bike lane and running or walking lane. And I was in the bike lane because there's a bit where there's a tripping hazard and I've run this path regularly. So I was in the bike lane and a bike was coming up behind me. The guy didn't like that I was in the bike lane and he kept dinging me with his bell. And I didn't move because I know the path really well and there's a tripping hazard, right? So because I pissed him off so much, he shouldered me from his bike while I was running. He dug his shoulder in and slammed it into the back of me. Like, it was so outrageous. And that's just like a tiny example of what women put up with every day. Just trying to go for a run. So you were talking about this exercise cliff that we fall off, but what about the next cliff that women tend to fall off?
Well, that's the cliff called having kids.
And kids, Lyndall says, are beautiful little time vampires.
Australians are actually a time-pressed society anyway. So, you know, about 38% of women are chronically time-stressed, about nearly 30% lower for men. When couples have kids, they've got to make a tough decision. How are we going to do this?
And what usually happens is men's hours either stay the same or even sometimes increase because they tend to earn better money. And because in straight couples, men usually earn more in the workplace, it's the mums who cut back on their paid work, not to relax or work out or get their nails done, but to keep the household running.
They can't shift time back to their partners usually because his job is like fixed. So she just has to soak it up and then she soaks it up. And one thing she has to give up often is time for her health.
But while mum has drastically reduced the time she spends on herself, Professor Lindell says dads usually find time for footy training.
So they could work long hours and they could still exercise because they had this give and take. They weren't kind of nailed to the clock like mothers often are with the things they have to do. And so they could find that flexibility in the between times from their work to fit in the exercise that women weren't doing.
When it comes to jobs at home, the tasks that are traditionally given to men are more flexible than the jobs that women take on.
The sort of housework that women and men do tend to be different because men, often their jobs like, you know, the yard work or gardening or playing with the kids and so on, that can be fairly flexible.
Right.
So you're not having to be at the school gate at 3 o'clock or at childcare at five. Mm-hmm. So women have the housework they do is often, you know, has to be done. It's urgent.
Women's jobs are often shackled to people's needs.
It's pickups, it's cooking, and has this kind of time sort of urgency to it that is very difficult for them to go, oh, I think I'll go for a run now, so I'll do that later.
Lindell, I used to love old-fashioned manuals for life, especially I just found them so entertaining and weird. And one of them once said, masturbation, it's one of the most selfish things that you can do. And it really stuck with me. I was like, is it really selfish to touch yourself? And sometimes I think that women's exercise is viewed with the same judgment. It is a selfish thing for a woman to do. Whereas for a man to exercise, it seems to be viewed as manly and a prideful thing, an appropriate way for him to spend his time. Would you agree that it's sort of viewed with different judgments?
Well, Yumi, I am wondering which books you've been reading.
Oh, yeah, lots of them. It was about from the 1950s, I reckon.
Well, okay, I'm intrigued. I think the thing is what women do is scrutinised in a way what men do isn't.
Right.
So we kind of have this way of thinking about the world that what men do is normal. So, for example, we assume that the way men have always worked and had to work, which is long hours being devoted to their job, is normal. Mm-hmm. And that when women want to join the workforce, then they've just got to do that.
Yep. And you've said yourself, Professor, that men need to work more like women.
We need to start to shift away from there's one way to work here and that's the best way and the way that should get rewarded, to go, actually, there are people working very long hours here doing jobs and care, and we're not rewarding them. Actually, we're penalising them. Is that actually a right thing to do here? And the health part of it is an example of that cost.
A listener to this podcast, Anna, has been trying to get fit again after having two kids, and so we got her to send us some voice notes from Tassie to keep us in the loop. The main problem seems to be that her exercise goals keep getting blocked by a very cute obstacle.
When I was first on maternity leave, I was able to walk with Eleanor in the pram. But now that she's a bit older, she likes to walk. So it makes it really hard to find the time for me to get some exercise.
Anna's facing the dilemma that Lindell Strasden points to. We're often fighting a galloping mum guilt that outruns our dedication to fitness while also trying to caregive and run a household. So one of Anna's goals is learning to surf. She knew she couldn't go in the ocean without bringing someone, or even several people, to look after the kids. But when they got there, it still didn't work out.
I got the kids in the car, packed snacks, we packed lunch boxes, we packed all the beach toys. We were there with family and with friends and so many people to help out with our daughter. And I'm like, yep, this is going to happen. I went back to work this week and our daughter is adjusting to me being back at work 3 days a week and not being available and around all the time. So she's super clingy at the moment, which meant she didn't want to borrow my sister. So despite the fact that I had so many people there to help me and to look after her and help me have a surf, I sat on the beach and, look, I got my toes wet. So still no exercise. My husband, he was able to have a surf because our daughter didn't want a bar of him. So yay for him. But Yeah, not so yay for me. Anyway.
So how do we begin to crunch this gender exercise gap? Dr. Lyndall Strasden says you have to voice your needs.
We sort of still imagine that our time is just our time, but that's not true at all. We negotiate time all the time with, you know, all the people in our lives.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say there's one right way here. But first of all, one great thing to do would be to start talking about it.
Mm.
And be able to go, I'm noticing this. Yeah, I think we need to find a way to do this better. What would work? And I think it depends on the couple, what the strategies are. But the first thing is to start talking about it.
Yeah.
And go, this is actually a problem that we want to solve. And so it's, let's work on this together.
Let's interiorize it if possible. So imagine you're in bed, your alarm's gone off, you've got a whole list of things that you need to do, work, domestic and care duties to attend to. What can you say to yourself in that moment to help you get out of the house and do some exercise?
So what the research would suggest that having a routine is probably the easiest way to do this.
Yep.
So you just go, this is how the day will go every day at this time or this time, I do this. And then the household has to work around that as well. So we've got an agreement. There's a routine here because the routine, first of all, you don't wake up and go, do I feel like it? Oh, I've got a busy day. Oh, you know. It's like, this is what I do at this time.
Yeah.
So the routine creates the habit and the kind of momentum around that.
So lock that routine down and protect your time and invest in some friends, my friends.
There's a social side to exercise that both women and men rank pretty highly in terms of enjoyment.
It's just easier to run up that hill when you have mates at your side. You're also much less likely to bail when you're accountable to someone.
And so, you know, thinking, is it fun for me to go out with some friends and we just go for a walk together and talk? There was a really good physical activity campaign called Find Time for Your Health, and they rolled it out and they found that actually people weren't changing their behaviour even though they were telling them how to find the time.
The women did not have time, okay? Leave us alone.
And so they changed their tack. They went, all right, what is it that would make the difference? And they found that for women, going out and walking with a friend or talking with a friend or doing things socially, it made it funner and more connecting for them.
Wow. I love that because that's how I exercise. I walk, bushwalk, hiking, running or going to the gym, and that's all with friends.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's all social, and it's very much the social thing that gets me going.
Yep.
This social aspect was a big part of journalist Amanda Hooton's exercise transformation.
When I paid money to go to a gym, I would just roll over and think, oh, it's $20 down the
drain,
but frankly, I don't care. But I couldn't do that with my friends.
That's called accountability. And having accountability to people you care about, namely your friends, works. The choice to go exercise or not was taken out of Amanda's hands when she got roped into one of her besties' New Year's resolutions.
One of our number sort of said, look, I'm thinking of maybe doing a 10K run at the end of next year, so I want to start running. She was not running. None of us were running.
Mm-hmm.
She said, but I'm going to do that couch to 5K thing that, you know, everyone talks about. Does anyone want to do it with me? And we all kind of said, oh, yeah, we'll give it a go. You know, this is in kind of December and we were thinking about it as a sort of January New Year's resolution type thing. So it seemed far enough away that you didn't really think we'd ever actually have to do it. But January rolled around and my friend, who is very focused and, you know, does what she says she's going to do, said, right, well, let's do this couch to 5K thing. I mean, we didn't get going until probably March, but we did get going.
Right.
And it was horrendous, the start of it. You'd be running for like a minute and walking for a minute. And then I can remember at the very first run, we ran for like 45 seconds and I was like, how many more of these do we have to do? You know, it was really bad.
Were you guys laughing or were you?
Yeah, we were laughing. I mean, everyone was laughing.
Yeah.
And we went on this insane first run, which involved going up and down hills and through all this sort of bushwhacking and so we've never done that since. So we sort of very quickly figured out we had to make it as kind of straightforward as possible.
The friends worked out a schedule for their morning runs. At home, Amanda and her husband negotiated how to split their time to care for their daughter so that they both had time to work out.
We actually made an agreement that we would each take some mornings of the week for our exercise. And he actually took three of the weekday mornings. So on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, he looks after our daughter and gets her ready for school and takes total responsibility for everything that's happening so that I can go and do some exercise.
Thing. Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that in a single sort of one fell swoop, you know, removed all the sort of gender disparity in our household about that stuff. And I don't think I would have been able to do it unless we'd come to that agreement.
So three times a week, our once very exercise shy Amanda was up at 6 a.m.
And we just kept doing it. You know, you just kept doing the process. I can't say that I ever had this kind of moment of breakthrough where it suddenly felt magnificent or something.
But after that initial struggle, Amanda and her friends kept going and eventually they hit their 5K target.
It just felt extraordinary to have done it, you know.
Right.
So good in the aftermath.
Yeah,
just felt
right.
So thrilled. And it's taking like 40 minutes or something, so you're running really slow.
Yeah, yeah.
But just to know so clearly that that had been impossible sort of 10 weeks ago.
Totally.
And now you were actually doing it and your body could keep running for that long.
Were you guys all high-fiving each other?
Oh, my God, yeah. We just were just unbearable. So thrilled with ourselves. So pleased with ourselves. We were all going out to dinner and talking to other friends and then all our friends were just like, if you don't stop talking about running, we're leaving the table.
This was the first time Amanda had regularly worked out with friends and it was a revelation.
It is a social thing that you're doing. And so you come back and you get, it goes back to this thing of never having got any pleasure out of the actual exercise. It's true, I still wasn't enjoying the exercise, but I was so enjoying the time with my friends, the times chatting and listening to the gossip or workshopping. It was exactly the same conversation you'd have if you went for a glass of wine, but you're actually just doing this different thing while it was happening. And it was happening at 6 a.m. in the morning too. So it was like an additional little enjoyment in your day that you wouldn't otherwise get.
So when you were younger, your motivation for exercise was to lose weight and to look hot.
Mm-hmm.
What's your motivation now?
It is just to feel well. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and I've only really discovered this as I've done it, you know, and I've realized the benefits. One of the very first things I noticed was how it improved my sleep.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I could just sleep better if I was physically tired.
Yeah.
But I also feel like I'm coping with stress a lot better. My digestion is better. I began to be conscious that it was harder to do stuff. So I'd be just doing stupid things like trying to put the iron up or put the quilt inside the quilt cover or something and I'd be feeling like, oh, I'm exhausted after this.
Puffed.
Yeah, I'm puffed. When I started doing exercise, I realised that after a while that I could just do all this stuff again, you know, and it didn't feel like a burden. You just didn't even think about it. So I've really noticed the difference.
You see it as a value add now.
Yeah.
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 Everything about Amanda's attitude towards exercise was overhauled. She's managed to dump the toxic body relaunches and found something that she enjoyed that makes her feel strong and healthy. But for our amateur surfer Anna, while the waves are still calling, she's biding her time with a smaller win.
Oh my gosh, miracle of all miracles. I was just able to do a swim. School holidays, so my husband is home with our kids and he's like, why don't you go for a swim? I've never been a particularly strong swimmer, so I've managed to get it to 1 kilometre in 25 minutes, which for me feels like climbing Everest. It's very exciting. So extra, I don't know, cherry on the top if we're looking at silver linings is I have to walk up the hill to the car, which I'm doing at the moment. My routine constantly changes and no week is ever the same and things change. So exercise doesn't become a routine. So it's constant problem solving. But today is a win. Today I got to swim. So I feel like I'm, I don't know, kicking goals. It's awesome.
Ladies, it is a radical and feminist act to put ourselves first and to take care of our bodies as though they matter, deserve care, and are a priority in our households. We're smart enough to not need reminding that physical fitness leads to untold rewards, not least of all being fortified mental health. But the amazing thing about being a woman is that what benefits us tends to benefit our families and our wider communities. So when we feel mentally and physically stronger, with that power, we can lift our children, partners, friends, and our communities. There's a saying that every pot has its lid, and to that I would like to add that every couch potato has its cheese. So while running might not be for you, surfing may be. And while gym workouts may seem like torture, dancing could be the cheese that lures your potato off its couch. Find the thing that is fun to do for you. Get friends involved or make friends already in the activity. Tattoo it in a non-negotiable part of your schedule and share your caring responsibilities in ways that may well make you feel selfish, but that you deserve. This podcast was produced on the lands of the Gundungurra, Gadigal and Muwinina peoples. Ladies, We Need to Talk is mixed by Anne-Marie de Bettencourt, produced by Elsa Silberstein and Sarah Mashman. Supervising producer is Tamar Cranswick, and our executive producer is Alex Lolbach. This series was created by Claudine Ryan.